So I'm going to talk about just the Northwest because that's all I know. I'm not going to try and make any comment about the rest of Australia. But it's embarrassing to stand up here because, you know, whenever you look at a map of the syphilis outbreak, everyone points to the Northwest and where it started. I was here in 2011 giving an account of what of some of the interventions that were going on. And right at the start, we didn't have buy-in from government. It was all sexual health response and public health unit response. We had to draw in considerable resources from Townsville, Mount Isa, and Mackay to try and deal with this outbreak, and also the Tropical Public Health Unit in Cairns. So you've all seen this graph. This is what happened. The cases of infectious syphilis had fallen to a near low in 2010, and some people were speculating on elimination. And then the numbers, late 2010, the numbers started to rise. And it wasn't due to increased testing because there wasn't much testing going on. We were only testing one or two people a week in some of our communities. So because we never got on top of this outbreak, the Tropical Public Health Unit, together with the Aboriginal Division of CDB, came up with this action plan. And it really is an excellent plan. It covers all aspects of what you might think you need to do in this situation. You know, it talks about eliminating congenital syphilis and reducing the rates of chlamydia and gonorrhea. And you can see it's all there. If anyone wants it, it's on the website too. But this is what has happened. So we saw a decline. And then as soon as the plan came in, we saw an increase. I'm not linking the two up, but you know, despite all the activities that have been outlined in the plan, the number of notifications are going up. And so what's happening in 2019 is that we're going to see probably the same number of cases. And now a younger age group is sort of, you know, a younger cohort is coming through. So we're seeing syphilis in 15-year-olds and 13-year-olds. So it's getting to be problematical. And there's been no change in our testing rates. And HIV, it's there. It started off as a little outbreak in Cairns, but has now appeared in Townsville and has also appeared in the Northwest. And the problem in the Northwest is that we can't link people up to care because we don't have the resources available. There's just a sexual health unit. We don't have an outreach team like they have in Cairns. We haven't seen any congenital syphilis for the last 12 to 18 months, but we're still seeing babies who are at risk. So these are our testing rates from 2014. The red line is the 2019 testing rates, and you can see we're on track for around 2014. You know, there are just a lot of issues. One of the principal issues is that the number of tests in critical groups like young men has actually fallen to the lowest level ever, but the yield is much higher. So the yield is close to around 12% in the group of young men that we've been testing. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the strategies we've put in place and some of the outcomes. So the Northwest was one of the first places where we started to add on syphilis testing to blood that was taken in the emergency department. It was a long process, and eventually we managed to get the right permissions to do it. Initially, we did it in both Indigenous and non-Indigenous and found that there was no syphilis in the non-Indigenous, and so we were asked to concentrate on the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander group of individuals. So you go into an emergency department, if you have blood taken, syphilis test gets added on by sexual health, and then sexual health undertakes the follow-up of that test and those individuals. And there are mechanisms in place to avoid over-testing, and if people refuse, then we have a system to take that into account. So this is the impact of add-on testing. On average, we probably do about 150 to 170 tests a month, and almost 30 to 50% of those tests are added on. Despite all the work that's been done, we can just not get clinicians to order syphilis tests. So that's why the add-on testing is quite important. In some communities, there is no testing at all by practitioners in the community. It's all add-on testing. The problem with add-on testing is that when people present, not everyone has blood taken. So last year, for instance, 25 to 30% of people had blood taken. That's it. So around 70% don't. So what we need to do is set up an outreach to the emergency department, because that's where a lot of Aboriginal people get their care from. The second approach that we've taken is population lists. We want to know who's been tested, who hasn't been tested. And we're working with Gidji Healing on this. There are lots of issues around, exchanging information and stuff, and the CEs of both organizations can't sort it out. So we're working on different lists, but we're working together. That's the main thing. And I'm just going to present some preliminary analysis. This is one of the communities that Gidji's been working in and we've been working on. And you can see we're looking at different populations. So there are people on their list that have never been tested. There are people on our list that have never been tested. But when you exchange the information, you find that people have been tested. But what is of note is that only a few people, that about 20% of women have never been tested, but up to 40% of men have never been tested. So we're trying to find these individuals, and and it's really, really difficult to find them for all sorts of reasons. Now, most of our work is fly in and fly out. A team either drives in or flies in, stays a couple of days, and then leaves. And there are lots of reasons for this, lots of infrastructure reasons for this. But in this particular case, one of our nurses lived on a community for almost 18 months and was there for 3 weeks on, 1 week off. And what she managed to do was increase the baseline testing, not only of people who presented, but she managed to get into the networks of individuals who were diagnosed with syphilis. And it was actually a very good model. And I think that's the model that we should be having. We should be having a permanent presence on the ground. Even Gidji fly in and fly out. And it's a 715-based model, so when they don't have doctors, which they didn't have recently, they actually can't do the stuff in the communities. So pulling it all together. I mean, we really never ask the community what they want. It's not the responsibility of the sexual health unit to do this. It has to be done at a higher political and strategic level, and it hasn't been done. We can say a lot of things about the Aboriginal Health Force and how we don't have one in the Northwest. We can talk about needing an epidemiologist, and of course, it's not just about syphilis, even though this talk is essentially about syphilis. But the fundamental sexual health and social issues need addressing. And a sexual health unit can't do that. It's got to be at a different political and strategic level. And I think Nacho put it best. And, they're saying the ongoing crisis in Indigenous, and I put sexual health, is due to generations of neglect and lack of cohesive public policy, and a failure to provide sufficient resources and ensure that they reach people on the ground. The SDI plan had $15.8 million attached to it, and I'm not sure where it's gone, because it's certainly not being reflected on the work in the ground. It's almost like activity without outcome. And Scott Morrison, in his speech about Close the Gap, did say, top-down does not work, only partnerships do. We are not at that point. We don't know how to engage the population. It's as simple as that.